If you want to get to heaven, got a D.I.E. You gotta put on your coat and T.I.E. Wanna get the rabbit out the L.O.G. You gotta make a cold motion like a D.O.G. Not like a D.O.G. Like a D.O.G.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, sweet, beautiful Texas. A little Waylon Jennings getting things kicked off for us here on the Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, powered, of course, by Hoff Power Polaris. I'm your host, Cable Smith. So great to be here talking hunting, fishing, the great outdoors, and all that implies with you folks this morning. We're broadcasting with a heavy heart today. Myself, Maverick, and Bell, all very sad that the Texas waterfowl season ends this weekend. Hope everybody goes out with a bang. Hope that you made plenty of memories to last a lifetime in the duck blind this year. I know I did. Made a lot of new friends, saw some great retriever work, and even took a couple old friends on their first ever duck hunt. So you can't beat that. Anyway, we've got a great show lined up for you this morning. We're going to be all over the map. We'll kick things off by talking with the Exotic Wildlife Association Executive Director Charlie Seeley. We've got some great news to get into concerning the three species known as the Three Amigos, the Scimitar Horned Oryx, the Attucks, and the Dama Gazelle. And Charlie will be here to give us a little history lesson on the EWA and also talk about the situation concerning those three species. Then we'll change it up, talk a little bass fishing with pro fishing icon Ron Sheffield. He's earned over $1.3 million in an illustrious 20-plus year career that includes 7 wins on the BASS Tour. And we'll get into one of Ron's favorite winter techniques, which happens to be swim jigging winter grass lines. We have plenty of grass lines here in the Lone Star State, so we're certainly looking forward to visiting with Ron. Then we've got a predator hunting special, our 2014 edition, planned for the bottom half of the hour. And we'll start that off by visiting with one of predator hunting's most renowned individuals. He's the host of Carnivore TV on Pursuit Channel. He's the owner of Burnham Brothers Game Calls. He's written a litany of articles on calling coyotes and bobcats, also hunting with hounds. So we are thrilled to have the great Gary Robertson join us to talk daytime calling strategy. And then in part two of our predator hunting special, we'll check in with Chris Robinson. Chris is part of the Carnivore Night Crew, and they specialize in nighttime predator hunting. And it's a totally different ballgame when you compare daytime calling versus nighttime calling. And Chris will share all of his expertise with us coming up here in just a little bit. So it's going to be a great show, one that I am really looking forward to. A couple things to mention here. Our January 2014 Photo of the Month contest is going on right now. Send me your best outdoor photo. You can email it to LoneStarOutdoorsShow@gmail.com for your chance to win a Tritronic Sport Basic e-collar. This is for all the folks out there who own a hunting dog of any kind, really. This is the premier shot collar on the market. Both Maverick and Bell wear it when they're in the field, and I highly recommend it. We confirmed that Coons Canyon Ranch will once again sponsor our Photo of the Year contest, where our 12 monthly winners from 2014 will compete at the end of the year for a chance to join me on an exotic buck hunt. You can choose between hunting black buck or axis buck down at the lovely Coons Canyon Ranch in Rock Springs, Texas. Let's go ahead and do a quick giveaway this morning. I've got one of our Lone Star Outdoor Show PETA They Can Kiss My Texas A **** t-shirts. I'll send one to the first person to text in the word coyote. That's coyote to 214-289-7807, and you'll win this Lone Star Outdoor Show PETA They Can Kiss My Texas You Know What t-shirt. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Exotic Wildlife Association Executive Director Charlie Seeley. You're listening to Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show.
But all the smoke and the neon keep his pain here. Oh, nobody knows the honky-tonk
here. Ed Hansen's Outdoor Adventures is East Texas' premier waterfowl guide service. Hunters enjoy great shoots on Lake Fork, Tewakinee, Cooper, and private areas including flooded timber and private tanks throughout Northeast Texas. You'll also see amazing retriever work and a guide in Ed whose passion is putting you on birds. With an increased daily bag limit of 6 birds per hunter, now is the time to book your September early teal hunt. Call Ed at 903-521-4595 or visit hansonoutdoors.net to book your hunt today.
Howdy, outdoorsmen. Whether you're looking for the ideal place to customize your everyday truck or your ranch 4x4, Lone Star Conversions can do it all. Specializing in custom Jeeps, trucks, exterior liners, spray and bed liners, lift kits, bumpers, and lights, it's our purpose to provide customers with the most unique, best-valued conversions anywhere. Stop in and see us at our convenient location off of Highway 380 in Denton or call us at 940-484-5500. Of course, you can also check us out at LoneStarJeeps.com.
Cable Smith here for Magnolite, a Texas-based lighting company that's been outfitting the United States military since the 1960s. Over the past decade, Magnolite has continued to support our troops, but now they have over 200 lights ideal for your hunting and fishing needs, like the 35-watt HID camouflage Go Light Striker with handheld remote. That's 15 million candle power in the palm of your hand, ideal for predator and hog hunting. They also have remote-controlled floodlights, feeder lights, and LED boat lights. So go Texan and go Magnolite. Check them out at www.magnolite.com for all your outdoor lighting needs. If you're in the market for a firearm, you need to know about STI International. Based out of Georgetown, Texas, they're 100% employee-owned and offer the best warranty and customer service in the business. STI is renowned worldwide for exceptional fit and function. The patented 2011 high-capacity system proved so successful in shooting competitions that over 80% of competitors used STI guns or pistols built on STI frames at the USPSA National Championships. To see their full line of premier pistols, visit STIguns.com or check them out on Facebook at STI Firearms. STI, the continuing evolution of the 1911.
I use my pickup a lot for work and play, so I needed something that would protect my truck bed through the world of abuse I put it through. A buddy of mine suggested Toff sprayed-on bed liners. He swore by them, said they were better than the other guys, and they'd make my truck look good. Toff, huh? He said, yep, spelled T-O-F-F. So I went to the website, toffliners.com. They can spray any truck, and they've got 4 locations in DFW. I'm glad my buddy turned me on to Toff. It's strong, it's durable, it's Toff. Ask for Toff sprayed-on bed liners.
By the river, mud bank, no thanks. I'm just gonna sit here and miss her. So, mister, here's my $20. Don't play no songs about trucks or trailers or tailgates.
There's a little Wade Bowen by request bringing us back on Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, powered by Hoff Power Polaris. I'm Cable Smith. Great to be here talking outdoors with you fine folks this morning. This segment of the show proudly brought to you by Sendero Seed Company, Texas premier seed company. They've got anything and everything you need to keep your whitetail herd happy and healthy. Give my buddy Rob Hughes a call at 1-877-610-SEED or check them out online at senderoseed.com. Sendero Seed Company for all your planting needs. Well, our first guest today joins us to discuss a major victory for hunters, exotic ranchers, and landowner rights. For 4 years now, we've been covering the plight of 3 specific species, the scimitar horned oryx, the dama gazelle, and the attix, also known as the three amigos. We finally got some good news to share with you, and so here to talk about the situation in depth is my pleasure to welcome Exotic Wildlife Association Executive Director Charlie Seeley to the show.
Well, Cable, thanks. We appreciate the invitation and look forward to visiting with your audience a little bit.
Charlie, first of all, how long have you been the director of the Exotic Wildlife Association?
I've been at this position for 13 years.
Oh, wow. So you've been there a while. Charlie, what is the EWA's main goal and or mission statement?
Well, we represent the members of, obviously, exotic hoof stock, and we are as a matter of fact, we are the oldest private property rights association in the country. We're founded in 1967, and our members own more numbers of rare and endangered species than any other association in the country.
Okay. Back it up to 1967 here for a second, Charlie. Just a little history lesson for myself and our listeners. What were some of the first exotic species that Texas ranchers started importing for the purpose of hunting?
Well, back in the mid-30s, of course, there was a lot of mouflon, and they called them Barbados sheep, things like that, that were originally brought in. And Audad, Captain Rickenbacker, as you remember, World War I ace, was one of the first to start bringing exotics into his ranch here in the Texas Hill Country. And then from there, the Schreiner family with the famous Wild Ranch, and of course the Prios, and a lot of those folks, they needed a way to supplement their incomes, the cattle and the sheep and goat industry, which was huge here in this part of Texas, was just not making making their payments. The fluctuation of prices up and down on these animals is what caused them to take and look at alternative livestock. And they saw what was really going on over in Africa, and the safari type hunts that were done there in South Africa and in other parts of Africa. And they thought, you know, the terrain, the climate, and everything is almost identical to those parts of Africa. And they thought that these animals would probably do quite well on the landscape. That's where the safari style hunting got its name here, and was in this part of Texas. And the rest, as they say, is history. We're now a $1.3 billion industry right here in the state of Texas.
Well, I figured it was in the hundreds of millions of dollars. No idea it was $1 billion a year industry here in Texas. But Charlie, you know, the past 4 years we've been fighting this ridiculous legislation being forced upon us by anti-hunting groups regarding the three species that have become known as the Three Amigos. Without exotic ranches, most notably here in Texas, there's a decent chance that the scimitar horned orcs, the attics, and the dama gazelle would all be extinct.
Well, you're exactly right, Cable. And most of of these three species had really had their beginning back in the early 70s. There was a small herd that was obtained from one of the zoos here in Texas, and they were put on a private ranch, and the numbers just exploded. And, of course, that individual, who probably some people remember, is David Bamberger, a great conservationist over in the Johnson City area. And, of course, he sold off surplus stock to other ranches, and they did so well that eventually in 2004, the Exotic Wildlife Association, along with Safari Club International, teamed up to remove these animals from the restrictions that they were currently under with the Endangered Species Act, which required people to even to breed them to have a captive breeder's wildlife permit. And then if there was to be able to take their or manage their herds through a culling process, a commercial culling process, they had to have what was called a commonly referred to as our take permit. Mm-hmm. And but the obtaining those things was so onerous, and there was so many restrictions on this. Quite frankly, the animals just didn't do very well under the onerous restrictions of that ESA. And we sought through Fish and Wildlife to obtain an exemption for those three species because they were quite plentiful in the Texas Hill Country and across the country in the southern states. And we were granted that exemption, and this was under the second Bush's administration that we were able to get that exemption for the three species, and it went into effect September 2nd, 2005. Mm-hmm. So promptly, animal rights group called Friends of Animals filed a lawsuit saying that they were harmed from the standpoint that hunting was not being it was not conservation, and that there was no ample opportunity to under the federal registry to be able to comment on permits that were being obtained since the ranchers did not have to have permits. But during that time frame that the lawsuit was being heard and being settled, those three species, absolutely, their populations just exploded. And Cable, the bottom line is, in order, these ranchers with any livestock have to make a profit at the end of the month. And if the animal does not have a value, then they're not going to raise that animal. It's not going to be there on the landscape. It's got to pay for itself.
Oh, yeah.
And these animals had a value because we could buy and trade and sell them freely. And so their numbers exploded. Well, the lawsuit was eventually settled, and unfortunately, those three species were put back under the restrictions of the Endangered Species Act. And from that point, we've seen almost a 40% decline in the scimitar horns and probably a 70 or 80% decline in the attics.
Uh-huh.
As a result, people just didn't want to raise them anymore because they didn't want to have to go through the restrictions and the public information portion of obtaining permits through the federal government.
Well, yeah, and it made hunting them more expensive. You had to pay, I think, like $150 for the permit. And then on top of that, the ranch had to pay what, like, was it like 10% or something in addition?
There was an enhancement fee. That's what the federal government refers to as enhancement fee, which is to enhance that particular species. And it's usually a 10% of the sold value of that animal. So, in other words, if they sold that animal for $5,000, then $500 has to be donated to an enhancement program, which EWA has enhancement programs for all three of those species in their native ranges, where we are actively trying to repatriate those three species back to their native range.
Mm-hmm.
And that money certainly is being used to do that. However, it was still having a detrimental effect just because the number of ranchers who chose to get the permits and obtain those was probably about 1 in 10
The
people that owned them before. April of 2012, we went under the permits. Well, EWA and other associations such as Dallas Safari Club and SCI had been working through the U.S. Congress to try to get this thing settled once and for all. And folks may remember the 60 Minutes piece that was done on CBS where they featured these three species. And we received a tremendous amount of favorable emails, letters, and phone calls from folks who even identified themselves as animal rights activists or anti-hunting, but said they understood what we were doing. This was the momentum cable that we needed that helped us push this thing through Congress. And as you say, the rest is history. The president signed it into law last Friday. And so 60 days from last Friday, which will be around mid-March, the permitting process, the restrictions, the exemption that we enjoyed in 2005 will be placed back on these three animals. And as a result of that announcement this past weekend at one of the local livestock auctions, those prices on those animals almost doubled. So it's having the effect that we knew it would, and these animals will continue to flourish, and quite fortunately they will abound and be on the ranges for, you know, out here on the Texas range for generations to come.
Well, this truly is the news that we've all been hoping and waiting for. And going back to that 60-minute feature, I believe that's where the Friends of Animals lady made the infamous quote, where, and this just shows their true colors, where she said she'd rather these animals go extinct than hunters be allowed to harvest them.
That is correct. And her name was Priscilla Farrell. She was she's the CEO, president, if you will, of Friends of Animals, who filed the original lawsuit. And she, with that one sentence cable, as you said, it really let the American people who watched that show know what the true agenda of most of the animal rights folks are, and that is they would rather see them extinct than to have us conserving them and hunting them on Texas ranches.
Well, this is a huge victory for landowners and the hunting community, and we are celebrating today, but, you know, the war is far from over. We won this battle, but there's another one on the horizon, I guarantee you.
Well, you're exactly right, and there will be another one, and there's several more animals that are found here in Texas, and there's no telling we know what we can do if we can get these animals out from under the restrictions of the Endangered Species Act. These animals will absolutely, their populations will explode.
Well, Charlie, we certainly appreciate your time today. Thanks for all y'all do with the EWA, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, we appreciate that, Cable, and same back to you and yours, and y'all have a great rest of the weekend.
All right, there he goes, Exotic Wildlife Association Executive Director Charlie Seeley. We appreciate his time, and if you want to get involved with the Exotic Wildlife Association, you can check them out online at myewa.org or call them at 830-367-7761. Well, let's knock out a quick break. When we come back, we're talking big winter bass with pro fishing legend Ron Shuffield. You're listening to Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show.
That's where I'll be. It holds the answer to all my dreams.
Hi, I'm Craig Boddington. I'd like to invite you to become a member of Dallas Safari Club, one of the world's leading hunting and conservation organizations. As a member, you'll receive Game Trails magazine, a monthly newsletter, and invitations to our monthly meetings and special activities. Join Dallas Safari Club, an international organization based in Dallas, supporting hunting and conservation worldwide. For more information, call 800-9-GO-HUNT or visit our website at www.biggame.org.
BioBoar EB is the premier gasoline additive that combats the negative effects ethanol has on an engine. Its comprehensive formula is designed to protect marine engines and marine environments, yet also works great in all 2- and 4-stroke engines. It prevents phase separation and ethanol-related engine problems while stabilizing fuel for 18 months. BioBoar's detergents also clean the entire fuel system of carbon and varnishes. BioBoar EB has the best treat rate in the industry. 1 ounce treats an amazing 15 gallons of gas. Available at your local sporting goods store or visit BioBoar.com today.
Howdy folks, I'm Lee Hoffbauer for Hoffbauer's Outdoor Superstore in Goldthwaite, Texas. We hope you love listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show, because we do, and we're proud to be a title sponsor. Now listen up, we here at Hoffbauer Outdoor Superstore have got some great deals for you folks that love the great outdoors. Whether you're needing a brand new Polaris ATV or maybe a Polaris Ranger to ride around, check your deer feeders, get to and from the deer blind, maybe to get you down to the dove patch, whatever your needs are, we can fix you up with a brand new Polaris today. Now we're also a New Holland tractor and equipment dealer. Now I'm just speculating, but maybe you need a new tractor and shredder to shred around your deer blinds, maybe clean up around deer camp, or maybe even shred a few lanes in the old sunflower patch. Now, we've got lots more than just Polaris and New Holland, so come check us out today, Hoffbauer's Outdoor Superstore in Goldthwaite, Texas. You can check us out on the web at hpolaris.com. Better yet, just come see us. Highway 84 West in Goldthwaite, Texas, and in Central Texas for over 48 years now. And folks, we couldn't have stuck around this long. We were steering you wrong.
Hi, I'm Hank Parker, and when I'm in Texas, I'm listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
The head sustains me, and that gypsy train that called my name is saying, go on home, go on home. But nowhere bound is home for now, so get on board.
A little Songbird Jones bringing us back on Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, powered by Hoff Power Polaris. Gypsy Train's the name of that one. Great tune there. I'm your host, Cable Smith, by the way. So glad to be here with you fine folks this morning. We're about to talk some wintertime bass fishing, but first, this segment, proudly brought to you by Lone Star Beer, the official beer of our show. And whether you're just getting off the lake after a long day of fishing, or you're sitting around the old campfire at deer camp, nothing goes down better than an ice-cold Lone Star beer. Lone Star beer, the national beer of Texas. We'll move it right along here. We're going to talk some swim jigging winter grass lines for big bass with a pro fishing icon. He's won over $1.3 million in his 20-plus year career. He has 7 BASS wins to his credit. He also fished the FLW Tour from 2007 to 2013. And his latest article is featured in FLW's Bass Magazine. It's my pleasure to welcome Ron Sheffield to the show.
Well, I'm glad to be a part of it.
Well, we are certainly glad to have you, Ron. And like I mentioned, your career accomplishments speak for themselves. In over 2 decades as a pro, you qualified for 15 Bassmaster Classics, then switched over to the FLW Tour in 2007. And you finished third in the points there in 2012. So, in this long list of accomplishments, what are you most proud of?
I think probably the 7 BASS wins, the fact that I managed to pull off that many victories against the competition. And, you know, I was coming up during the same period when, Denny Brower, Hank Parker, Roland Martin, all those guys were still out there, some of the best names in the industry, Larry Nixon, Tommy Martin. A lot of those guys took me under their wing and taught me a lot of little things and tricks and some shortcuts into trying to make it as a professional. And of course, you know, I struggled. I started, like I said, December of 1985 and only fished 4 events and met with some success and decided to go ahead and do it full-time in the 86-87 tournament tour. And I managed to win my first BASS Top 100, actually, that they ever held on Lake Okeechobee in November of 1987. And that was, at that time, it was a $100,000 first-place prize, which was like $80,000 in a fully rigged Granger boat. And I took that, paid off what little money I borrowed to get started, and that started my career from there and went on. And, you know, once I was able to win my first one, it became easier to win again. And I had a pretty good run through the early mid-90s, and then things started slowing down, and a lot of it may have been just he's getting older and more great young talent coming out there every day. Uh-huh. That has a lot to do with it.
And how old are you now, Ron?
I'm 57 and a half.
Wow, so you're fishing against kids half your age. Speaking of which, you've left a legacy as well. Your son, Spencer, he finished 11th on the FLW Tour this past season.
Yeah, Spencer's a great fisherman. He's really a lot better fisherman than I ever was. He's got the full package, got the look, he's the age. You know, and I spent all my years, him growing up, I started him probably at the age of three and a half. Actually, he was fishing before that, but that's whenever I started getting him into the baitcaster, thumb bar reels, Abu Garcias, and he just did, you know, by the age of four, he was flipping. He could actually flip and pitch, and, you know, so he grew up around it all the time. Well, he was fortunate he had a dad that was involved and had the opportunities to give him the chance, and, man, he took it and ran with it, and just, he knows so much about all the new technology, the side scan, down imaging, and everything. They've come so far in the sport during the 28 years nearly I spent out there that it's amazing at what fishermen today have versus whenever I started. It was more about being able to go out there and spend 3 days hunting, looking, and packing around and trying to figure places out or find them on your own. But now guys are lucky enough they've got the everything's on a map for them or a map screen. You can go out and find places now in 10 minutes that it took me 20 years to find.
Well, Ron, I know that you live in Arkansas. That's where you're from. But you have spent a considerable amount of time on Lake Fork. You've guided there off and on in the past.
Well, I haven't. I guided some down there 2 years ago, actually for, 2 years on and off I did. And then I kind of got away from that, and I got tied up in some other things I was doing and just kind of let that go by the wayside. But I still have a place there, and I plan on restarting that back up maybe this spring probably and doing some trips with a good friend of mine, one of the top guides on Lake Fork, Rick Carter. You know, not go down there as a full-time, but try and pick up some extra cash on the side working for them and fishing one of the greatest legendary lakes in America.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. And Lake Fork is responsible for 3 of the 4 sharelunkers caught in Texas so far this season. And there's other lakes here in Texas that come and go. You know, they might produce 4 or 5 sharelunkers in a season. But year after year, Lake Fork continues to be the gold standard.
Well, it's a perennial destination for anybody that wants to go fishing one of the greatest lakes, like I said, in America that has a big storied lifetime to it. And it has, like any other lake, it's had its share of its own ups and downs. And I know in the last couple of years, they've gone through a pretty bad stage of water being low, and they lost most all the grass in the lake due to some whatever reason. But it's starting to come back little by little, and I really expect Fork within the next couple of years to be back. Maybe never as good as it was in its heyday, but it's going to get back to where it's going to continue to pump out more and more of the sharelunkers throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, and even on a bad year, I mean, Fork is still going to produce more sharelunkers than just about any lake out there. But let's go ahead and talk about your recent article in the latest FLW Bass Fishing Magazine titled Swim Jigging Winter Grass Lines. Most of our Texas lakes and Arkansas lakes, you know, southern lakes, are going to have some decent winter grass. So first of all, walk us through how you locate those grass lines.
Well, in the wintertime, I'm generally what I'm trying to do is I tend to spend more time out towards the mouths to the halfway points of a lot of your major tributaries. And what I really, one of the best case scenarios for me is to find a fairly large flat area that holds grass that's pretty close or adjacent to some deeper water. It doesn't have to be a channel swing or anything of that nature. It just needs to have quicker contour line drop-offs, in other words, where the water falls away from the grass a little quicker than it does on just a standard grass flat that would, say, go out to 8, 12, 15 foot or wherever the outside edge of the grass is and then just come to a total end. I like one that, and the deeper the outside edge of the grass, to me, the better or more productive that pattern or technique is going to be.
And something else to think about that you reference in the article, if you're bringing in live greenish-colored grass on your retrieves, you're likely going to be catching more fish than if that grass is a brown color.
Seems like there again, the brighter the green grass, the better it is, the more consistent it is for holding fish on a regular basis. And I think that's just the way bass are. I'm not saying you can't catch them out of some of the browner vegetation, but it just seems to me like the fish don't relate to the bottom near as well around the dead vegetation as they do, or actually as tight to the edge of it even as they do the greener grass.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Ron, once you've found that grass line with a little contour drop-off there, How do you position your boat before you start casting?
Well, one of my things I've pretty much figured out over the years that if I'm coming on to pretty much an extended warming spell, that those fish will tend to be more up on the grass or closer to the edge of the grass. And grass scenarios are all different. Some places you've got grass that just slowly tapers away from the surface and goes deeper. Other lakes, you know what I'm saying, it may be 3 to 6 foot down to the top of the grass, and it just kind of stays that way until it goes out there and the grass just gets shorter and shorter and ends. But what I like to find is grass that has, you know, generally at least a 2 foot of water over the top of it, but more commonly, if I can find grass that's got 6 to 8 foot of water over it with an outside edge ending in that 12 to 15, 18 foot range, that seems to be the most productive. And I relate that to the fact of its proximity to deep water. And that grass also is usually a healthier grass. And the way I'm going to set up on it is I'm going to, talking about an extended warming trend where the water is starting to warm, a lot of those fish will be kind of suspended around and just swimming around out over the outside edge of that grass. And I'll take and position my boat a good half a cast away from the grass, and I'll make a long cast, not straight in, but kind of a 45 angle, quartering it basically at an angle, and just I'll let it go down to the top of the grass. And I'm not using a super heavy jig, but I'm using one that and my favorite is probably a 5/8. I'll go as light as a 3/8, but usually 5/8 or half. That's the two I have the best success with. And when I see my line first slack just a little, and then when I hit the top of that grass, I'm only going to reel my jig just fast enough to keep it in contact or just above the top of that grass. And what I'm actually trying to do is hit any irregular feature, such as a high clump or an isolated patch that might be just a few inches taller than another one. And as soon as I do that, I'll just kind of rip my jig out of it and let it drop. And that's when 90% of the strikes will come. As soon as you pause that jig and it starts to fall again, that's when those fish will pick it up. I don't get that many bites just on the straight retrieve. And it's basically a straight retrieve like slow rolling a spinnerbait.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to really trigger a bite. And those fish seem to be a better quality fish, too, than you would say cranking, throwing a rattle trap or some moving bait, a square bill crankbait. I seem to get a little bit bigger average. I just don't get the numbers of bites, but those are better quality fish.
And I think this is a technique that's often overlooked, Ron, because a lot of folks are out there cranking a lot of times in deeper water during the winter, but sometimes they're fishing these same winter grass lines. They're just not using a swim jig.
No, it's not a real popular technique. A lot of people just haven't caught on to it, but a swim jig is a great, you know, 12 months out of the year bait. There's always ways to catch fish on it, and that just is one of a good buddy of mine, Tom Monsoor, from up in Wisconsin. He's an old time swim jigger, and that's one of his claims to fame. And he makes an awful good swim jig, and I use his a lot. But Tom tends to stay more with the quarters and 3/8, and I got to experimenting with the heavier ones. And I use bigger trailers. I'll use sometimes I'll go as you know, with a big old Mongumbo grub. It's as big around as your thumb on the body, and it's about a 4.5 to 5 inch long swim tail on it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a regular grub swim tail. That's it. I use that, and usually in a bluegill is one of my favorite patterns with that, and I'll put it behind a black and blue jig, or another one of my favorite is pumpkin with green pepper. That's probably the two favorite all time, unless I've got a little watercolor, and if I do that, I might use one that's got a jig that's got just a little bit of chartreuse, maybe 2 or 3 strands of chartreuse in it, but I keep my colors simple. I try and imitate a bluegill or something pearl and silver, you know, to imitate a shad. And that's really the two things I'm trying to imitate. I don't necessarily think I'm targeting fish that are feeding on crawfish. I think I'm targeting fish that are feeding on bluegill or shad that are swimming around.
Very well. And Ron, one other thing that you hit on here, when the lakes start really cooling off in the winter, temperatures drop, especially here in the southern United States, we experience shad die-offs. And that's when you'll be fishing these grass lines and you'll change it up and use a jerk bait, which you fish very slowly.
Oh yeah. And I'll fish it in a lot of the same areas. You know, one of my favorite jerk baits is a Megabass Vision 110. And what I like to do is I'll throw it usually on 10, 12. Sometimes I might go as heavy as 15. And the main thing with a jerk bait is what dictates the line size to me is not the size fish I'm catching or type of cover I'm targeting. It's how deep I want my jerk bait to get down. I've figured out with the Vision 110, if I only want to be able to jerk it down about 4 to 5 feet, I can do that with, you know, some 15-pound test manufacturer's lines and others 12. and then I'll go down to 10 if I need to get it on down to the 6 to maybe as deep as 7.5 or 8 foot. I can jerk one down on a good long cast that depth with 10-pound line. I rarely ever go anything lighter than 10, and so that's what dictates my line size, and all that depends on usually when I'm doing that. I'm also doing it a lot around grass edges, but by doing it totally out off the outside edge, and in that case, I'm positioning my boat much closer to the grass and trying to assume a parallel cast just before I'm working my bait down about towards the outside edge, and that's when I start doing a lot of my pauses, because I feel like a lot of those fish will suspend closer to the bottom, and they'll come a pretty good ways up to get that jerk bait, and I want the bait to sit in the strike zone as long as possible and not move, you know, and one of the biggest mistakes people make on a jerk bait is they'll jerk it, but they don't jerk it and just give the rod maybe an inch of slack back, and what happens is that jerk bait's never actually still or doing its slow sink or slow float up or whatever, however people may have one weighted. That's one of the problems. So I always jerk, and then I just give my rod a little, like a inch and a half move back at the end of the jerk so that my bait is totally on a slack line. And I believe in watching your line just like you would if you're fishing a jig, because I'll see as many bites as I'll ever feel by seeing your line twitch.
Well, Ron, great insight this morning, brother. I certainly do appreciate it. Sadly, we're out of time. I could talk bass fishing with you all day, but we do have to get out of here. Congrats on one heck of a career spanning the better part of 3 decades. And I look forward to reading your next article in FLW's Bass Fishing Magazine.
Well, I appreciate it, and I hope everyone in Texas is able to take something I gave them and go out there and catch some big ones, because you live in one of the best big bass lake states in America.
Thanks again, Ron. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Thank you for calling.
All right. There he goes, the great Ron Shuffield. Hope you all enjoyed. All right. There he goes, the great Ron Shuffield. Hope you all enjoyed a little bass fishing talk with him today. That segment, by the way, brought to you by Rudy's Barbecue, including the newest Rudy's in front of the Cabela's in Allen, Texas. So whether you're just getting off the lake or coming out of the woods, stop in for breakfast, lunch, or dinner and enjoy Rudy's true Texas-style barbecue. Well, let's knock out a quick break. When we come back, we'll call some coyotes with one of the most respected predator hunters out there. He's the host of Carnivore TV and the owner of Burnham Brothers Game Calls. Gary Robertson joins us momentarily. You're listening to Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show.
But sometimes at night, when the cold wind moans in a long black veil, she cries o'er my bones. She walks these hills in a long black veil. She visits my grave when the night winds wail.
Ben Lofton Fencing is Texas' premier fencing company. They apply a design it right, build it right the first time mindset to all projects. And with 15 plus years experience, there's no job they won't tackle. Ben Lofton Fencing specializes in deer and exotic game fences, breeder and handling facilities, water gaps, as well as farm and ranch fences, and corrals and working pens. Better Business Bureau certified, they offer the quality and personal service you expect. So for your next fencing project, go Texan and call Mr. Lofton himself at 254-709-1320 or visit benloftonfencing.com.
Do you have a hog problem at your ranch or deer lease? We have the solution. The System Hog Trap comes in two sizes, 17-foot and 30-foot diameter traps. After you trap the hogs, take the top section off the trap and use it for another feeder site to keep the hogs away from the feeder. The System is both a trap and a deer food plot fence. That way you don't waste your money on just a hog trap. Call 940-391-3669 or visit www.goinfencing.com. That's goinfencing.com.
Hey, North Texas sports fans, this is Brian Spagnola, General Manager of Texas Motor Cars in Addison. My family's been in the car business for over 50 years, and I want to show you the difference in buying from a family-owned and operated business. TexasMotorCars.com is an awesome website that lets you do virtually all of your shopping online. We have a professional photographer that takes amazing photos, and we give you all the information that you'll need up front. You can even find out how much we will give you for your trade-in before you ever come in. I take pride in the fact you can come in, choose a car, and be out in less than an hour. We have financing rates starting at 1.79% on pre-owned vehicles and can help almost anybody. Please do yourself a favor. If you're in the market for a pre-owned vehicle of any kind, give us a shot. Let me show you how easy buying a vehicle should be. Visit TexasMotorCars.com or come visit our 20,000 square foot indoor showroom in Addison. Again, visit TexasMotorCars.com or call us at 1-888-9-TX-MOTORS.
The new Bobcat utility vehicle is here at Bobcat of Dallas and Fort Worth, and it's hungry. Get ready to work like an animal and love it. Powerful, ultra-comfortable, and sure-footed, this lineup of vehicles delivers legendary Bobcat performance, so you can sink your teeth into a wide range of jobs. With twice the horsepower, 1,850 pounds of payload capacity, and four-wheel independent suspension, you will love it. Stop in at Bobcat of Dallas and Fort Worth to see for yourself.
Hey everybody, this is Brandon Ryder, and you're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Snow poking down a blacktop, cutting ties on a wide rock. There's a party on a dead end road. We're just hoping that the cops don't show. Somebody is looking for a fight. It's gonna be that kind of night when I get too far from home.
Back Roads, one of my favorites from Brandon Ryder, bringing us back on Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, powered by Hoff Power Polaris. Cable Smith here. Thanks for letting me ride shotgun with you as we're about to go full throttle into our predator hunting two-part special today. But first, this segment of the program proudly brought to you by STI Guns. They're Texas-made and Texas-owned. STI has a full line of pistols in 1911 and 2011 styles, and they also have a great predator hunting option in their sporting rifle AR chambered in .223, which is actually my go-to rifle when calling coyotes. So check them out at STIGuns.com, and go Texan, go STI. Well, our next guest today is one of predator hunting's most respected individuals. He's been at this longer than I've been alive. He's written hundreds of articles and features on everything from calling predators to hunting them with hounds. You name it, he's done it. He's also the owner of Burnham Brothers Game Calls and the host of Carnivore TV on Pursuit Channel. It's my pleasure to welcome Gary Robertson back to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me along. I appreciate it.
You bet. And man, Gary, I just can't tell you how much we're enjoying using your CompuCaller 3 in the field. The death toll is steadily rising as we're getting a little bit better at this game.
Well, we thank you, and you know, the guy that hunts the best hunts the most, so just stay after him. That's what I tell folks.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And unless you're under MLD, your whitetail season's over here in Texas, and that means folks are starting to really shift into to calling predators full-time. Gary, do you have a favorite month of the year to call coyotes?
Well, my absolute favorite month would be January. And, you know, a few years ago, you know, that was not a big deal. Most of the hunting in Texas, deer hunting was over, you know, early January. And so we could get on a lot of the really good ranches, then, especially in South Texas. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it seems we've kind of, you know, we're bumped more into February because so many of those big ranches have MLD permits.
Right.
And the deer season just goes longer. So they've bumped us, you know, more into February, but my favorite month would have to be January. It's colder, and of course, the colder it is, the more calories, you know, that predator is going to burn just trying to make a living. And the more calories he burns, of course, the hungrier he's going to be. Also in January, there's, you know, vegetation is very low. Most of the leaves are off the brush and trees. And visibility's better.
All right, so January, your favorite month to call, probably closely followed by February. But, Gary, is there a specific time of the day where you think that you enjoy the most success calling?
If you were really looking for probably the days through over the last 50 years that have been the best for me, would be those days, of course, that are cool to cold, with some cloud cover, not rain, because so many predators, you know, especially cats, don't like to get out in the rain, but a little foggy or misty.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like, you know, they're more active. They may be more active because I guess, you know, they're a little more difficult to see, but they tend to be more active in those days. And unlike Some people like to go when there is, you know, no wind. They feel like is the better. But, and I used to agree to that. But nowadays, I like a little breeze blowing. I like to know when I sit down, you know, where my scent's going. And it also tells me, you know, how that coyote is going to respond to the call. I know he's going to the downwind. It makes him a little bit more predictable. Now, the wind doesn't help you on a cat, but because a cat, you know, he knows he can't smell anything, and he's not going to the downwind. So he doesn't play the wind. But on the coyote, which is still my favorite game, he wants to know where that wind's blowing.
Mm-hmm.
I also like a little wind because I like to hunt into it. If I hunt into the wind, it's help cover my sound. If I'm in a pickup, you know, it covers that pickup sound. The first thing I want that coyote to hear or bobcat to hear is, you know, that cry I'm making on that call. Mm-hmm. I don't want him to hear those unnatural sounds.
Right, right. But as far as time of the day, Gary, you know, a lot of hunters think that right at sun up. Others prefer sun down as their favorites. And another faction says between 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning is the best time. What are your thoughts?
You know, the last call of the day and the first call of the day are generally good times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I will also say that what I have studied for years is the Salinger tables that give you active feeding times. Now, I don't worry about the Salinger tables much when we're hunting deer because most of these deer, of course, are programmed to when that feeder goes off. And let's face it, that's the way most deer are killed in Texas. But predators are, you know, they don't care when a feeder goes off. They're still governed somewhat by the, you know, by the moon. And when Mother Nature tells them it's time to get up and feed, that tends to be when they're active.
Mm-hmm.
Now, weather can override that. But if say, you know, it's a good day, it's cool, the wind's not killing, you know, not that bad, and it says it's going to be an active feeding time at noon, by golly, I want to be sitting out there making a call. I don't want to be sitting at the Dairy Queen eating a hamburger.
Gary, it's funny you mentioned those Salinger tables and active feeding times. My buddy swears by them, and I was down in Webb County deer hunting with him about a month ago. I think it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and he's looking at this chart on his phone, and he's like, Cable, we got to go right now. It's time to rattle. It's an active feeding time. I said, hey, let's change it up and try to call a coyote in. And sure enough, within 5 minutes, we had one on a string.
Oh, yeah. And I'll tell you, in any of your listeners out there, I will almost guarantee if you're driving a road, a highway, whatever, and you see a coyote or bobcat cross the road in the middle of the day, I will almost guarantee you it is in an active feeding time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They just don't get up willy-nilly and travel. They get up when Mother Nature tells them it's time to travel.
Mm-hmm.
I know exactly where you're coming from, and I do watch those active feeding times.
Gary, what is your go-to sound for this time of year? Obviously, that's going to depend on whether you're targeting coyotes or cats, but let's stick with coyotes this morning.
Well, this time of year, I still love the, you know, the grown cottontail sound. Here in a few months, say February, later February, early March, I tend to go to more deer distress sounds, and I'll use a little more canine pup, especially canine pup sounds, mm-hmm. or coyote pup sounds. But this time of the year, it's still hard to beat the rabbit for coyote, in my opinion. You know, I guess if you ask a fisherman, what does he catch fish on? If he likes to throw a worm, you know, he's going to catch most everything on a worm. And you use what you have faith in and what's worked in the past. And about the only time I leave that rabbit this time of year is if I go on a ranch where I know it's been called pretty hard. I know probably they've done the same thing. So I want to hit them with something different. And if I go into a place that has been called, like say, I'll probably use maybe even fox distress a good bit. You say gray fox distress, or I may go to some of the canine distress sounds, and even some deer distress this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
As we come out of the rut, you always find a real spike in coyote predation on deer herds, and it's because those deer that are coming out of the rut are in a weakened condition, and that's what we're seeing right now. And ironically, they're generally weaker on those ranches that are better managed. In other words, they have a more managed deer herd because their buck to doe ratio is generally closer. So the bucks are, you know, more competitive and tend to fight more. Hmm. Well, an old mature deer that really likes to fight, he's going to be the weakest, you know, one of the weakest in the deer herd.
Hmm. I've never thought about that angle, but it does make total sense.
Yeah, and some of the ranches we hunt in South Texas, the predation on, you know, mortality from coyotes on a mature buck, on the mature bucks, is as high as 35% in that herd. Huh. You know, you look at this deer. You know, a lot of guys, they said, I've got, you know, photos of this deer when he was two. I've got photos on my game cam when he's three. And I've got photos of him when he's four. And I sure wanted to see him as a five-year-old, but I don't know what happened to him. He just disappeared. Well, chances are he didn't make it. Mm-hmm. The coyotes fed on that one.
Gary, how long will you run the call before turning it off? I'm talking about, you know, seconds or minutes here before letting it rest.
Oh, I'll generally let it run for 15, 20 seconds and just shut it off for a couple of minutes if I'm calling coyotes. Uh-huh. If I'm really targeting coyotes, I don't give them as much sound. And the reason I don't is I give the coyote all the respect in the world. I feel he's the most intelligent animal out there. And I feel that playing a short period of time is more realistic. A lot of guys, they just go out in the woods, they set the collar out, and they just turn it on and just let it run. Well, that's not the way it happens in nature. You know, if a coyote runs in and catches a rabbit, he's doing everything he can to keep that rabbit from squawking. And I've actually, a couple occasions, witnessed them catching rabbits. Mm-hmm. And I think the most squawks I ever heard out of a rabbit was three. That coyote's trying to silence that prey animal. The quicker he can get that squawking stopped, the greater chances he's not going to have to share it with somebody else.
And Gary, just from our past discussions, I know that a typical coyote stand for you is going to last anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes or so.
I'm getting where I stay a little longer. Maybe it's because I'm getting older and, you know, when you get up, you're going to have to make another move and it's going to require more energy or another big walk. But I've also found that, you know, it seems like there's maybe a second wave or a third wave of predators that might come in if you'll give them that 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
You know,
uh-huh.
It seems like for some reason, most, when you sit down to make a call, most everything is there within seven. Uh-huh. But if you'll sit there and wait, again at about 17 for some strange reason, is another kind of magic time. You know, I don't know whether he was traveling from further away or whether he was just a little more stubborn and uh-huh. maybe he wanted to be a little convinced a little bit more.
Okay. Well, Gary, you know, from our previous discussions, I know that when you have a coyote coming in, you'll turn the volume of the call way down or turn it off completely. But do you ever just, instead of turning it back on, if say you lose their attention, do you go to a lip squeak in those situations?
What I do is when I see that coyote coming, if I have the call on and he's coming to me, I turn it off. And I just let him travel on his own. And if he'll come all the way up where I can get him killed real easy, I may never turn it on again. If the coyote's coming and he stops out there, that's when I've already lowered the volume, and then I'll just kick it on. And generally, as soon as he hears that sound come back up, he's going to come again. And then when he starts traveling, I just shut it off.
Uh-huh.
You don't need a lot of sound. Uh-huh. Once you get that coyote committed, just let him roll.
But do you ever use human vocalizations to stop them?
Well, if I'm using electronics, I don't, because uh-huh. I think it kind of defeats the purpose of carrying that call out there. Okay, we got him called up using that electronics. Then when I change and give him a lip squeak, well, guess what? He quits looking at the electronic call out there. Now he's looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I want him looking at me, I'll just walk. I won't even carry a call in there. I won't even pack it in there. I'll just use a hand call.
Hey, that makes almost too much sense. Gary, I think you've provided some great insight today. Hopefully, it'll help myself and our listeners in their future calling endeavors. If folks want to check you out on Carnivore TV, airing on Pursuit Channel, what are y'all's air times?
Well, we'll be going into our fourth season. We will air in the third and fourth quarters.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start airing back in July. And right now we're airing at Sunday evening at 6 is our primetime slot. And we are on the Pursuit Channel.
Right on, right on. And if folks want to check out your calls, like the CompuCaller 3 that I use, they can do so at burnhambrothers.com. You've also got decoys and all kinds of accessories on there as well.
They can, and we also have a Facebook site for Carnivore, which is just Carnivore TV, and would love for anybody to come look at the site and give us a little input.
Very well. Gary, we appreciate your time as always, my friend.
All righty. We thank you, Cable.
All right.
And we appreciate your listeners for tuning in.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Adios.
All right. There he goes, the great Gary Robertson. A good friend of the show and one of the world's premier predator callers. Let's knock out a quick break. When we come back, we'll turn that predator call back on, but this time we change it up and do it under the cover of darkness when Chris Robinson, part of Gary's Carnivore Night Crew, stops by. So coming up next is part two of our 2014 Predator Hunting Special. You're listening to Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show.
Did you know there's a bank that will pay you to be its customer? That's right. Lone Star Ag Credit is a cooperative, and since it's owned by its stockholders, pays millions in dividends each year. That's free money to every borrower. Lone Star Ag Credit serves people all over Northeast Texas, assuring you competitive interest rates on real estate loans, rural home loans, livestock and farm and ranch loans. Contact Lone Star Ag Credit today at 800-530-1252 or on the web at LoneStarAgCredit.com. Equal housing lender.
Hey friends, Cable Smith here for DFW Safes. We all know that our guns are a big part of our lives, from grandfather's old 12-gauge to that trusty tack driver of a deer rifle. And DFW Safes is North Texas' premier safe dealer, specializing in Rhino, Bighorn, Huntsman, Heritage, and Fortress safes, to name a few. They're family-owned and operated and have over 24 years' experience in the safe and installation business. They even have commercial safes for your business and scratch and dent safes for the most frugal of gun owners. Visit DFWSafes.com to set up your delivery today. That's DFWSafes.com or call 817-715-1068. At LSC Trailer Sales, we offer a full line of utility trailers, from small single axle trailers to heavy equipment trailers, ATV trailers, car haulers, landscape trailers, cargo trailers, truck beds, and more. We can special order a custom trailer specific to your needs and have the ability to customize standard models in-house. LSC Trailer Sales is here to assist you with any questions you might have about trailers. Call 940-484-5500 or visit us at lsctrailersales.com. Finally, quality trailers at affordable prices in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Hey y'all, Cable Smith here for Tioga Retrievers. As bird hunters, we expect the most out of our gun dogs. And that's why I sent my sweet girl Belle to Angie and Tim Becker at Tioga Retrievers. Not only were her manners and obedience spot on in the blind and in the field, but Belle picked up over 200 birds in her first season. So whether you want a well-rounded hunting dog or just a well-mannered companion for the home, Tioga Retrievers has you covered. Located in Aubrey, Texas, visit TiogaRetrievers.com. That's T-I-O-G-A Retrievers.com.
Coons Canyon Ranch in Rock Springs, Texas specializes in exotics such as axis deer and black buck. Coons Canyon offers quality animals at a price the working man can afford. Right now, save 10% on any package of multiple animals. Military personnel, police, and firefighters also get 10% off. Lodging is available upon request, as are other exotic species. Visit CoonsCanyonRanch.com for your next exotic trophy hunt. That's CoonsCanyonRanch.com.
Howdy Outdoors fans, Michael Curview, Internet Manager at Graf Chevrolet. We're proud to be the official dealership of the Lone Star Radio Show. We have a large selection of new Chevys starting at just $12,999. Lowest overhead means lowest price in North Texas. We'll beat any price on a new Chevy guaranteed. Drive a little, save a lot. Chevys are cheaper in Grand Prairie. Call 800-560-3518 or shop online 24-7 at GrafChevrolet.com. Graf Chevrolet, serving Texas Outdoors fans since 1952. Chevy runs deep.
Yeah, the sleep's getting harder these days with this warm Dallas weather and a cold-minded haze. Got a girl I love, I can't let go, but I'm still here in Texas, she's in Colorado. I want her love, I need her kiss. kiss. Gotta hear that laugh. I begin to miss. Feel the touch on my skin.
Back to Texas is the name of that one from Cole Risner, bringing us back on Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show, powered by Hoff Power Polaris. I'm your host, Cable Smith. Thank you so much for joining me on this frigid Texas weekend. This segment of the show proudly brought to you by Cabela's, who for over 50 years, Cabela's, the world's foremost outfitters, brought you legendary selection and service. Let expert outfitters show you all the newest hunting, fishing, and camping gear, as well as the best in authentic outdoor apparel and footwear at tough-to-beat prices. And you'll get free shipping when you shop online and ship your order to one of Cabela's three great Texas locations. Cabela's, world's foremost outfitter. Without further ado, let's jump into part two of our 2014 Predator Hunting Special. Before the break, we talked daytime calling strategy with Predator Hunting icon and host of Carnivore TV, Gary Robertson. Now we're going to change it up, talk with Chris Robinson. He's part of Gary's Carnivore Night Crew. They handle all of the nighttime filming and have been at this for a long time. So it's my pleasure to welcome Chris Robinson back to the program.
Hey, Cable. How's it going?
It is going, brother. We are just wrapping up duck season this weekend. Then we'll be hitting the predators pretty much full time. And like I said, we spoke with Gary before the break, but he's fortunate enough to hunt these vast, expansive ranches in South and West Texas. You and I, Chris, we're stuck up here in the North Texas area where urbanization gives way to rural areas. And coyotes thrive both in urban settings and rural settings. But I think folks often overlook prime calling habitat because they think that the tract of land is too small, or they don't realize that coyotes are living right there in close proximity to them. And I know you guys hunt a lot of these smaller pieces of property.
You are right. A lot of guys will look at places, and if they don't look like they're appealing necessarily right off the bat, they'll kind of overlook them as a place that they can really go and be successful. You know, Gary, he's used to hunting, you know, half-million-acre ranches out in New Mexico and some big ranches in South Texas. But a lot of times, if a guy's going to go out and be successful, he's got to hunt what he has. Mm-hmm. And in North Texas, a big ranch to us may be 400 or 500 acres. And there's even places that we hunt every year that some of them are as small as 10-acre little plots of land. But we'll go in there every single year and call up animals and kill animals off those places each year. A lot of times when you're dealing with animals that have been kind of bombarded by development and housing projects and stuff like that, if there's animals in those areas, if there's places that are still thick with a lot of cover, like creek bottoms and things of that nature, there's still going to be animals in those places, and they'll learn to adapt to whatever environment they may have to deal with. And you'd be surprised when you've got places that are like that, if you set up on them right and they're not pressured animals that haven't been educated to either lights or call sounds or whatnot, you can still go in those places and call animals in just like you're on a 1,000 to, you know, 500,000-acre ranch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We do it every year.
And more than likely, Chris, those animals are not educated or pressured because most folks don't think to call on a 10-acre tract of land.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, like, you know, Gary has a saying that at night, 8 acres looks like 1,000,000 acres. And, you know, to an extent, he's right. Granted, sometimes you have to be kind of cognizant of not shooting over, you know, certain people's property. You want to make sure that you've got good permission. And if a coyote does come in, you've got to make sure he gets on the piece of property that you actually have permission to hunt. But just because it's small tracts of land like that, that does not mean that you can't go and call animals off of it. The downside to it is a lot of times when you're hunting small places like that, you'll have to have a lot of places put together. If you know, whenever we go out on a hunt, usually we'll line up 8 to 10 places that are similar to that. We'll go in a gate, make one or two calls depending upon the size of the place, go out of that gate, drive 1/2 mile, 2 miles down the road and do it again on another place. That's just kind of the nature of this type of country that we hunt. You know, Gary, he likes to go in one gate and be able to stay in there the whole day.
Yeah.
And hunt on a single piece of property. But around here, we really don't have the luxury of doing that, so we just kind of have to play the cards that were dealt, you know?
Well, if coyotes have proven anything, it's that they're the most adaptable animal in North America. There's more coyotes today than there ever have been. Open range, fine. Close proximity to humans, no problem. They can scratch out a living anywhere. But in these rural situations where you and I call, how close will you set up to that piece of brush or that woodline or creek bottom that might be the only cover on an entire piece of property?
Well, you know, granted, the way we kind of hunt is a little bit geared a little bit more towards the filming side of things than just the going out and hunting and killing coyotes. A lot of times we'll try to set up in an area to at least give us enough distance between where we think they're going to come from and where we're actually going to be, to where if you do get a hard charger or something like that, he's not going to be right on top of us before we can get on with the lights and the camera and all that. But usually if we're just hunting and we pull in a place that we want to hunt, we'll try to keep at least 75 to 100 yards, if possible, between us and where we think they're going to come from. I always highly recommend, the last thing that you want to do is to go into a place you've never seen during the daytime and you have no idea how the place is laid out. It's always a good thing to at least go and take a look at those places during the day to know exactly where you're going to park the truck, because the last thing you want to do is to pull into a place and have to be fumbling around in the dark trying to figure out, okay, well, is this where I need to set up, or do I need to go over that next hill and things like that. But usually what we'll do is we'll know exactly where the truck's going to be parked. Mm-hmm. We'll pull in there, get out of the truck, get up in the high rack, or if you're hunting out of the back of the truck, basically set up, get ready to call, and as soon as that call comes on, that light stays on and goes 360 the entire time. Mm-hmm. We have guys all the time that'll ask us, you know, well, do you leave your light on or turn it off? Well, as far as I'm concerned, the second you turn that light off, that's basically the first chance that you're going to give an animal to bust you. You've got to leave that light on the whole entire time while you're making a call. Especially when you're hunting, it's even more important, in my opinion, when you're hunting small tracks like that. If you're kind of bunched up to where you don't have a lot of distance, you're not hunting big openings like that, those animals can get in and get out before you ever even know that they were there if you're turning your light off.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the biggest mistakes that guys will make when they're hunting at night, is turning their light on and off, because you can't see them without the light on, but I can assure you they can see you sitting out there in a truck in mm-hmm. the middle of a field with your light off.
Right, right. Well, Chris, off the air, I told you that, you know, killing coyotes during the day, not having a problem. I'm killing a few bobcats at night, but rarely ever having success with coyotes. And I told you what kind of light I was using. We're actually both sponsored by Larson Electronics, a great North Texas lighting company. But the spotlight I've been using is an HID. It's like 15 million candle power. You told me that that's really just blowing the animals out of there. It's too much light, and you recommended getting one of their halogen lights. And then putting a dimmer on it.
Oh, this kind of gets back to the whole color question. The best recommendation I can make for guys that are trying to figure out, okay, what kind of light do I need to use at night to hunt coyotes? If you've been killing coyotes your whole life with a red spotlight or a yellow light or a white light, use the light that you've got the most confidence in. The one thing that we do like about the white light, if you know how to run a dimmer in the lights mix in the power, you can have the capability of turning that light to where it's practically off when you're shining with it. When you get in an area and you start hunting and you're shining looking for eyes, that light only needs to be bright enough just to be able to pick up eyes.
Mm-hmm.
If you're seeing more than that, in my opinion, you're taking more of a chance of putting too much light on those animals. Really, all you need to know whenever you first hit an animal is that there's an animal there. And as long as it's bright enough for you to see eyes, that's all that you need to see. Now, the good part about having a dimmer in the mix is the fact that, unlike having just a filter on your light, you have the ability to turn that light all the way on and give your shooter ample light to be able to light up the target and see them at much greater distances, as opposed to having just a simple filter on the light to where you're basically limiting yourself to whatever amount of light will go through that filter. That's what you've got. It's like a fixed power scope, but you're just fixing the power of light that passes through that lens.
Mm-hmm.
With a dimmer, you don't have that. Whenever we switch from using a light with a filter versus going to a solid white light with a dimmer, we probably more than doubled the amount of animals that we put in the back of the truck. And it had nothing to do with the color of the light. It had everything to do with the fact that the guy that's on the gun can see, instead of just seeing a set of eyes and a silhouette out there at 150 to 200 yards, we were able to clearly make out the entire body of the animal and gave the shooter enough light to where they can make a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line is you can't shoot what you can't see, and you definitely can't make an ethical shot on an animal if all you see is eyes. We don't ever pull the trigger unless we know 100% we're shooting a predator.
Yeah, and I can see how slowly using that dimmer to put more light on the animal would be a lot less alarming for them than, say, just blasting them with 15 million candle power, which is what I've been doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt the least amount of light that you can put in an animal's eyes and still know that he's there, the better you're increasing your odds of not spooking those animals. Now, mm-hmm. with what we do, it's kind of different. We want to get as much light on those animals as possible. When you've got a committed animal that's not an educated coyote, we're trying to get as much light on them as possible just from a filming perspective. But for just hunting, the nice part about having a light with a dimmer is when you hit an animal with that light and you've got him coming, you've got past the stage of, okay, he's been initially hit with the light. He's either going to keep coming like it's not there, or he's just going to stop and look at it, or he's just going to turn and leave. Usually those ones that turn and leave, those are probably been called up and educated to a light, may mm-hmm. have been shot at by another hunter. There's all kinds of reasons those coyotes may be a little bit smarter to it. But the ones that you hit with that light and they just keep coming like it's not there, those are the ones that usually you can keep the light on them all the way up to a position to where, you know, you've got them in a place where you can crank that light up, get them stopped, and basically help your shooter get them in a position where they're basically the easiest to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the advantage, in my opinion, of having that dimmer in the mix, because you can keep that light dim all the way to the point to where it's ready to take the shot. And about a second or two before you get ready to pull the trigger, have your shooter ready to let them know, hey, I'm fixing to stop and get ready to pull the trigger. Burn them down with that light and give your shooter plenty of light to basically make a good kill.
Some great insight there. Chris, we're running low on time, though. If you could just give us some very quick answers on a couple more questions. How long will you stay on one stand before moving on?
Usually we'll run anywhere from about 15 to 25 minutes. A lot of that depends on how many different stands we're planning on making that night. But if we've got a lot to hit, we find that usually most of them, if they're going to come, they'll be there in the first 5 minutes.
Okay, and how long will you run the call at night before turning it off? For example, Gary mentioned that when he's hunting during the day, he'll run the call 15 to 20 seconds and then kill it for a minute or two.
With us, with what we do at night, we usually like to keep the call going. I know this is kind of a matter of personal preference. We like to run certain sounds for 4 or 5 minutes and then switch sounds, but we'll keep that call going usually from the time we get there to the time we leave. When you got a coyote coming in looking for a call during the day, that coyote's a lot easier to kill than one that's pinpointed a sound and he's going right to it.
Mm-hmm.
We like them basically keeping their attention focused on us the whole time we're hunting at night.
Okay.
That's why we like keeping that call going the whole time.
Chris, does the color of your truck make a difference when you're hunting at night? Say if you're hunting out of a white truck, are you going to kill less animals than if you were hunting out of a black truck?
Man, I've heard that question 1,000 times, and I don't know if there's a best way to answer that. I know guys that hunt out of solid white trucks that kill a ton of animals every year, but I know that those guys, they hunt like we do. When they go to hunt, they keep that light on the whole time. I do think that if you're hunting in full moon where it's really bright outside, there may be cases where if you've got an animal coming into a field and you don't have the light on them, they may be able to see a white truck faster than a darker color truck. But I've never been able to prove that. Best thing to do is just hunt out of what you got and keep that light going the whole time. And the faster you can get that light on them before they can see the pickup, the better your odds are of not getting busted.
Very well. Well, hey, Chris, we certainly appreciate your time today, man. I encourage everybody to go to Carnivore TV's website. Y'all have got an awesome night hunting DVD on there. I think my wife is getting tired of me watching it because it's a regular in the rotation. Of course, Carnivore TV will be back on Pursuit Channel third quarter starting in July, so y'all be sure to check that out. Chris, thanks again, and we will talk to you soon, bud.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. My pleasure, Cable.
Happy hunting, man.
All right, take care.
All right, there he goes, Chris Robinson, part of the Carnivore Night Crew. Hope y'all enjoyed our 2014 Predator Hunting Special. That doesn't mean we won't talk more predators in the future. Obviously, we will, but today was an in-depth look at daytime and nighttime calling techniques with two of the industry's best. Thanks to our other guests, of course, today, Charlie Seal of the Exotic Wildlife Association, and then, of course, professional bass angler Ron Sheffield. We appreciate his contribution as well. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making this show possible. Thanks to you, the listener, for being a part of Cabela's Lone Star Outdoor Show. Until next time, I'm Cable Smith saying, y'all have a great week in the outdoors. I'm
trying to keep this dream from dying out here on this honky-tonk road. Oh, out here on this honky-tonk road. Yeah, the lights are hot and the beer is cold out here on this honky-tonk road.
You wouldn't take a mule to the Kentucky Derby, and you wouldn't go swimming with your boots on. So why do folks wear mossy green camo to hunt the Great Southwest? Game Guard Camouflage is celebrating 10 years of putting hunters undercover in the rugged Texas terrain. Owner Craig Smith invites you to visit a dealer near you to check out the full line of hunting apparel, caps, bags, coolers, gun cases, dove hunting belts, and the newly designed microfiber shirts. Available in 13 different colors. So whether you're hunting, camping, fishing, or just enjoying the great outdoors, Game Guard has you covered. Visit GameGuard.net to find a dealer near you or call 888-381-4263. Game Guard, the official camo of the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
We all need a friend in the gun business, and that's why you should check out B&S Guns. Family owned and operated since 1987, we offer a lifetime warranty on all firearm purchases. At B&S, we have a gunsmith on staff at all times, and our 5,000 square foot building contains all your hunting and firearm needs. Open 7 days a week, we specialize in Nikon, Leopold, Browning, Remington, Swarovski, Benelli, Zeiss, and many more. Conveniently located in Garland, call 972-226-1816 or visit bsgunstore.com. That's bsgunstore.com.